in its nasty wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, critical and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burning slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people will turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom." It's all about getting an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to abibitumi.com. That's abibitumi.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of Ghana and catch the live stream there. Or you can download the TuneIn radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app. Internet TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream your program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. It's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always follow the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:07 here in the city of Philadelphia on this wintry Sunday evening. And we're in the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening radio program. Our guest this evening that's going to spend some time with us, and glad to have him with us, is President of the National Black Farmers Association, Mr. John Boyd. We'll be talking about the situation with our farmers. It'll be a very interesting topic of discussion. We've always had the farmers on the program at various times, keeping our audience abreast of what's going on. And I'm glad to have Mr. Boyd with us to spend a little time. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and R Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I heard you said it was chilly, but earlier, you know, it was a little with the rain, it got a little warmer. I mean, warm enough for me to go out there and do something for my health a little bit. So I'm good, but I'm also glad to be in conversation about land, right? And hopefully, you know, develop our conversation around what is the future prospects of land. Everyone talks about how important land ownership and the wealth creation and developer from land, but we know, you know, the challenges we have had as African Americans in this country as it relates to land and productive land in this economy. So I'm looking forward to this discussion.
You know, Richard, you know yourself and at the time that you have been on as host of the program, and even before you, Brother Reggie Ragu was hosting with me, and we've always had the farmers on talking about the situation with our farmers, going all the way back to when we had the some of the named plaintiffs from the original Pickford versus Glickman lawsuit, Mr. Eddie Slaughter and Mr. Lucius Abrams. So they've always kept us abreast of what's been going on to the present day. I'm glad to have Mr. John Boyd with us, president of the National Black Farmers Association, to talk about this current situation. If you remember, Richard, a couple of months ago we had Jillian Henshaw on, one of the attorneys for the, some of the farmers, and talked about the money that was allocated during this present administration, Biden administration, that has never gotten to the farmers, that have been tied up in court. Let's talk about some of these things with our guest, president of the National Black Farmers Association, Mr. John Boyd. Dr. Boyd, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great.
Good, good, good. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you with us. We're on Time for an Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. Yes. How you doing now?
Good, good, good. Glad to be on with both of you.
Mr. Boyd, you know, this is a topic of conversation that we've had several times.
Yes.
on Time for an Awakening, and I've heard you on Brother Carl's show talking about this situation. I'm glad that you came on tonight to kind of continue this discussion, because it's important for our people to know exactly what's going on with our farmers. This is something that you don't hear on the popular media, that you don't hear on a lot of popular black broadcasts. They don't talk about our farmers like they're a non-entity or like they don't exist. But I'm glad that we can have this conversation with you to find out exactly what's going on.
Yes.
Dr. Boyd, tell us, and I mentioned to the audience before you came on, that about 2 or 3 months ago, we've had Jillian Henshaw on. She's an attorney. You might know her, that represents some of the farmers. And she talked about the money that was allocated in this American Rescue Plan through the Biden administration that has been tied up in court, never got to our farmers. Talk about this struggle that you're dealing with and this current situation.
Absolutely. And that's it's $5 billion, and it's called debt relief and injunctive relief that we never got in the first two settlements. We have had two settlements, one in 1999, the original black farmers settlement for about $1 billion. So 20,000 black farmers participated in the first lawsuit. 83,000 black farmers and families came after the filing deadline in that lawsuit, and lobbied Congress 10 more years to get redress there. And after that 10 years, the case was reopened and settled in 2009. They said that they had to go back to Congress to get the funding to pay it. That was $1.25 billion. That bill was signed into law on December 8, 2010. Neither one of the settlements provided injunctive relief. Injunctive relief is debt relief that I just spoke about, nor did it provide land and inventory to the 40,000 black farmers who are meritorious in both of the complaints. So in 2016, the measure was in the farm bill that provided debt relief to black farmers. That language was stripped out in the House conference. And then we were able to, lucky enough, to get it into the COVID relief spending package with the help of Senator Cory Booker and Senator Ralph Warnock. Debt relief is simply those black and other farmers of color who have a direct loan at USDA or a guaranteed loan that's guaranteed by one of the top 10 banks. So we were able to get that measure in $5 billion, and many of us were elated about it. I'm not going to lie to you. We thought it was a great thing that we finally got debt relief to black farmers who've been waiting over three decades to get it. And then white farmers started suing us, say it was reverse discrimination, They claim that us receiving the debt relief would be harmful to their operations. And they also claim that it's unconstitutional to play black and other farmers of color debt relief. White farmers was receiving all of the debt relief from the United States Department of Agriculture, and black farmers were getting a 30-day loan acceleration. The part of servicing for USDA is called 1951, S as in Sam. That's the loan servicing for our country for the United States Department of Agriculture. Under 1951 S, they can provide loan reamortization, debt write-down, total debt forgiveness, like white farmers were getting with ease. None of those things were provided to black farmers, but the loan acceleration, the loan acceleration, and that's how we lost millions of acres of land in this country. So while we were losing millions of acres of land, white farmers were getting total debt relief. These are large-scale white farmers in the Midwest and these other states. So to come back and now and say that basically black farmers are trying to do something unconstitutional or some sort of reverse discrimination, white farmers don't know what the Sam World discrimination is, people. They don't know what it feels like. They don't know what it looks like, and they don't know what racism and discrimination is. And they don't know these things because they've been getting all of the money all of the time for all of these centuries and decades. So the National Black Farmers Association filed amicus brief, and the Association of American Indian Farmers filed amicus brief in all 12 of the cases around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And many people think that it's only one case that white farmers have filed. It's 12 different cases in different states around the country. The Texas court issued a temporary injunction. The Florida court issued a temporary injunction. And I think the gentleman's name is Sid Miller, the ag secretary there, Stephen Miller, one of them from Texas, the ag secretary there. He's leading this campaign, organizing these white farmers to sue black farmers. And I want to say this, in my 39-year career, I never sued a white farmer saying he or she shouldn't get anything that they were eligible for. I sued to say we want the same as, period. And those two words, same as. When they get debt relief, damn it, we want it. When they get debt relief, when they get subsidies, we want it. When they get loans, we want it. Operating, farm ownership, farm equipment. When they're getting all of these loans, we want the same thing, people. And also, during the 30-year request of trying to get debt relief for black farmers, it's been in the Washington Post, it's been in the New York Times, and the Wall Street Journal, and CNN. Never did one white farmer call me and say they thought it was problematic that the black farmers get debt relief. Not one white farmer reached out to me and said, oh, we don't think you guys should get debt relief. Only until it was passed and signed into law did white farmers run to these conservative courts. I left that piece out. Very conservative judges they picked to file these complaints in around the country. Only then did they say it was problematic. So my thing is this. If you've been getting the debt relief all of the time, all of these decades and all of these centuries, how in the world is it reverse discrimination where we've been trying to get it for over three decades and couldn't get it? So that's part of the issue that we have. I see it as a continuation of Jim Crow, slavery-type activity and sharecropping, people, because here you have white farmers who are clearly saying in federal court they don't want black people, in this case black farmers, to get any money. And people, the black community, we have to wake up. We're sitting there on social media, and I read all this stuff on social media. Half the stuff out there shouldn't be getting any attention. And issues like this, we can't get the interest and the attention that it rightfully deserves, people. You know, land ownership, you know, the most positive tool you can own is land ownership in this country. And we're losing land. We're losing farmers. The turn of the century, we represented 1 million black farm families in this country. We were tilling 20 million acres, and those are the actual statistics, people. 1 in 14 were black. 1 out of every 14 farmers in this country at the turn of the century were black. And now we're less than 50,000 black farmers. We're less than 4.5 million acres of land. And, you know, when Congress has issues from the animal community, when the brown bear is facing extinction, the black bear, the bald eagle, snail, all of these things, the rockfish, when all of these things are facing extinction, Congress puts laws in place to protect them so their numbers come up. And here it is, the oldest occupation in history for black people in the United States, whether it was forced labor or sharecropping labor or free after the Civil War, the oldest occupation in this country for black people is farming. And we're facing extinction, and Congress continues to put a Band-Aid on something that needs major surgery. Those are the facts, and those are the realities that we're facing right now in the year 2022. We're not talking about something that's going on in 1950, people. We didn't get 40 acres on a mule, and here we have $5 billion on the table, and we didn't get it. I see it as another broken promise by our federal government to black people. And if people are listening, I would like for them to download the song by K.J. Marley, Bob Marley's grandson, called The Land. And it's a very powerful song that we did together, and I hope that people will listen to that song. It's called The Land, and it's by K.J. Marley, who is Bob Marley's grandson. I'm going to stop there and then maybe take a few questions from you guys.
Dr. Boyd, let's go. I want to go back a little bit, because when we had Attorney Hitchell on, at that time, it was four municipalities or different cities that have filed lawsuits to block the farmers. So you say now it's up to 12.
It's 12 complaints. Now, and we had to file, the National Black Farmers Association filed amicus briefs in every one of those courts so that we can have all of the details about all of the numbers I've been laying out on your show right now. It's also documented in our amicus brief in each one of these courts. So we had to hire law firms in those prospective states that are licensed to do business, such as Florida and Texas and Wisconsin and all these other states. And we had to hustle. We had to hustle to meet those deadlines and to raise the funds. And that's why I was speaking to Carl the other afternoon. Well, we have to get the black community involved. They need to know about what's going on with black farmers in this country, man. And they need to know what the federal government and what white men, that's who's suing us, people. You know, you can lay all the political stuff out there. You know, Biden signed the bill. It's white farmers who are suing blacks to say, we don't want you to get any of the $5 billion, people. That is their position in this country. And as I stated earlier, it's a continuation of what they did for sharecropping when they filed subsidies on black farm families and got the monies. And even when blacks owned the land, the white farmers were still claiming them as the tenant of that farm, claiming the subsidies and government incentives there. I see it as a continuation of that, not wanting blacks to receive the actual debt relief. And let me explain what debt relief would do to a black farmer. If I lived in Georgia and I owed the government $200,000 on this farm and they have the deed to my farm, if the debt was forgiven, my farm is now free and clear, and I can really could jumpstart my farming career is what could happen. So you get 20% for us. It's 120%. So the debt relief is 100%. And then 20% comes to the farmer to pay the taxes, so we don't have the same problem we had in both of the prior settlements.
You know, and it's kind of funny, and I'm glad that you kind of drove that definition home, because during the Obama administration, when the word was going around on popular media and social media that the victory was claimed and black farmers got paid, we had several black farmers that came on the program, Eddie Slaughter and some of the other men, that said it was never about $50,000, which a lot of the farmers didn't get, but it was always about the land loss and debt relief.
Hey, so, listen, if the government had came to me in 1983 and said, "Board, we're gonna clean the slate with you and allow you to just keep your farm and continue to farm," I would have been the happiest young black man in this country. And that's a very honest statement. I wasn't looking to do any of this kind of work. I wasn't looking to advocate for black farmers across the country. I simply wanted to be a farmer that I was trained to do by Thomas Board, my dad's father. My daddy taught me how to farm. My mother's parents were tobacco and cotton farmers. They were sharecroppers, Lee and Ruth Robinson. Farming was in my blood, and that's all I ever wanted to do. But when I got introduced to the government in 1983 by another black farmer who sold me his farm by the name of Russell Sally, he said, "Well, where are you going to get money from, Board?" I was a young guy, and I didn't know about getting farm operating money and so on and so forth. I said, "I don't know. Where are you getting money from?" He says, "Well, the Farmers Home," that's what it was called back then, "the Farmers Home Administration is supposed to lend black folks money." He said, "But good luck with them folks up there, but I'm going to take you up there." And he did. And when I went into the room, I quickly learned what was going on. He had basically already foreclosed on Russell Sally. And Russell Sally was saying to himself, "Okay, if I'm out, then let me find another black farmer that can at least buy the farm or have the farm." And he asked Mr. Garnett, this is the guy who was there at USDA making loans for Farmers Home Administration. He says, Russell Sally says, "Well, am I going to get any money out of this, you know, after these debts are paid?" And Mr. Garnett said, "No, Russell, you won't be getting any money from this transaction." And he had one arm. He had a half arm and one whole arm. He took his right hand and he slammed down on a desk, and that desk bounced up off the ground. And he said, "If I ain't going to get any money out of it, I don't care if you give it to Board for 25 cents. And he started talking about all the things this guy was doing to him. And I was 18 years old, and I honestly was thinking, "Oh, my God, this guy's getting ready to kill my deal," because I really wanted this farm, people. That was my mindset at 18 years of age. And as time progressed, I found out what Russell Sally was experiencing was a systematic discrimination and racism by this particular county supervisor, mm-hmm. and what he was doing to all of the black farmers there. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't a 60 child up. And he told me, he said, "Well, if you don't learn how to talk to me, you're never going to get a loan in this county." He wanted me to say, "Yes, sir," and "No, sir." And, you know, I was partly, you know, I'm not a 60 child. I was saying yes and no. The basic English people. And these black farmers that he would only see us all on Wednesday at 9 a.m. And we all be lined up in the hallway. We all knew each other. And one day we looked at our letter, and our letters all said the same thing. Wednesday at 9 a.m. So we named it Black Wednesday. And he would leave the door open and talk loud and boastfully and degrading to these elderly black men. They were deacons in the church. One or two was a local elected official in the area. And he would refer to us with racial epithets, boor, and colored. These were things he was saying in the 80s and 90s, people. Colored. I want the listeners to make sure they understand the word I'm using. That's what he was referencing to. And one time in this exchange I had with him, a loan application exchange, this farmer comes in. His name was Earl. That's all I remember. And instead of him asking me to get up and leave the office so he can conduct business with the guy. He really shouldn't see him during my loan application time. So I need the listeners to understand that. He brings the guy in. I'm sitting there, and they're having a one-on-one conversation as though I'm invisible. Yeah, that's what discrimination means, people. They look at you like you're not even a person. And he's carrying on this conversation. They're having pleasantries about going down to the local steakhouse and have dinner and all these such things. And at the end of the conversation, he reached up on the corner of his desk and passed him a government check that almost looks like a tax check back in the day for $157,000. I'm looking at the check. Passed him the farm operating check, and Farmer Earl turns around and heads out the door. And Mr. Garnett says, "Oh, Earl, wait a minute. You got to come back in here next week sometime because I just used last year's numbers. So you're going to have to come back in and sign the application and all this stuff." So here this white farmer, Earl, walks out the door with $157,000. I was in there literally begging this county supervisor for $5,000. He had already told me, "No, I'm trying to talk him out of $5,000, people, so I can plant and harvest my crop." And this white farmer had not even filled out an application, people. He hadn't even filled out an application. He walks out the door. And in the 80s, that's a lot of money, $157,000. That's the kind of in-your-face discrimination that we face as black farmers. This man spat on me. And he told the investigators at USDA, they asked him, did you spat on John Boyd? What do you think he said?
No.
I know he denied it.
He said yes. He said yes, I spat on that old boy, but I accidentally missed my spat can. he was that. That's how bold they were. He said yes, I spat on him. And they said, "Well, you only made two black farm loans out of your whole county, and one was an advisor to the committee. Do you have a problem making loans to black farmers?" He says, "Well, yes. I think they're lazy and look for a paycheck on Friday, but it has nothing to do with me doing my job. Now I know how to do my job." And that's the arrogance that we face from these white racist county officials, and people, that's what they are. You can try to sugarcoat it or call it whatever you want. He tore my application up and tossed it in the trash can after he did that, after he did exchange. He tore it up and he said, I don't care if you don't ever come back in my office." And he says, "Boy, I'm the next thing to God down here in this county. Don't nobody lend no more money in this county than I do." The latter part of the statement is true. Yes, they lend more money than all the banks put together in the county. That part is true. But he said he was the next thing to God, and I wasn't a very religious man the way that I am today. And I said, "You know what? I said, I don't know what God looked like, but he don't look nothing like your racist, you know what." I said, "He can't look like you." And the other black farmers wasn't talking to him like that. And so I kind of thought it was just me at first. And then I saw as the years passed by that this guy was just, if you looked up discrimination and racism in a dictionary, they had to have his picture beside it, man. I mean, openly racist, working for the government. And once they investigated him, they found him guilty of discriminating against me and many others in the county. Instead of firing him, like they did Shirley Sherrod, instead of firing him, they allowed him to transfer to Greenville County, Virginia, and continue his racist ways for a number of years before he retired. So when you hear white people say, "Oh, there's no discrimination. What are these people talking about?" This guy was carrying out discrimination for so long, he's seen it as commonplace for his actions day in and day out, people. And what I mean by that is he saw nothing wrong with what he was doing. And after he spat on me, it's only by the grace of God I didn't hurt this man. Because there's a part of me that what we call in the country, I wanted to take him to the woodshed, people. And I got up and I walked to use the men's room and I came back. I said, so you're not going to lend me any money? And he says, no. And I don't give a, you know what, if you don't ever come back and so on and so forth. And he started cussing and I did. And it got from bad to worse after that. But you shouldn't be treating black farmers in that light as a person who's supposed to be representing the government. And I never got my land out of inventory the way that many black farmers never received their land out of inventory. It was white farmers who were getting the land out of inventory that was taken from blacks for pennies on a dollar of what we owed on it. So I wanted to be very, very clear with that. And $50,000 would never address the land loss, the racism, the humiliation, the discrimination that we faced as black farmers in this country.
Yeah, Mr. Boyd, before I pass things on to Brother Richard, we got some calls on the line. I just want to get it clear. You mentioned that somebody in the ag secretary is the one organizing these white farmers to file this suit?
I believe it's Sid Miller. Yes, Stephen Miller, something like that. You can take a quick look at it. But, yes, he's an ag secretary from Texas. And Texas is a state where USDA denied black farmers 8 out of 10 loan requests from black farmers in the state of Texas last year was denied. So here you have this ag secretary who should be providing fairness and equity to black farmers in the state. Instead of using that seat to help black farmers, he's using it to organize a national campaign to deny black farmers the justice, a little bit of justice with the debt relief. And, I had a farm that was foreclosed by USDA. So I want to be clear. I know what that discrimination feels like. And, I was at that auction and I watched all of these white farmers in front of my farm, almost a mile down the road. You could see nothing but pickup trucks of white farmers bidding on my farm. And I can tell you, it's a very humiliating feeling. And the gentleman's name is Sid Miller, Texas Ag Secretary Sid Miller.
Okay.
And Stephen Miller, who's the other organizer of these lawsuits, is an ex-Trump advisor to the Trump administration. His name is Stephen Miller. These two together are orchestrating a national campaign to file these lawsuits in federal court and deny black farmers justice in this country. So we want to make sure that the listeners know those two names, Stephen Miller, ex-Trump official, and Sid Miller is the ag secretary from Texas. And they're highly funded and organized, and they clearly selected conservative judges and conservative judgeships to file these cases in federal court, all with the end result being to deny blacks and other farmers of color. Farmers of color are simply this: Hispanics, Native American, and Asian Pacific Islanders. Those are the target groups that fit farmers of color. And the total number that should have been receiving debt relief is over 14,000 black farmers. Farmers of color. And Secretary Vilsack, who already served two terms under the Obama administration, that didn't help me on the Hill get the Claims Remedy Act of 2010 passed. He done nothing to help me. And when I spoke to then Vice President Biden, he wasn't president then, in South Carolina, I told him that we desperately need change at USDA. He was one of the co-sponsors of the Claims Remedy Act of 2010, Biden was, and so was Obama. So they both knew about the discrimination that we faced at USDA.
Wait a minute. You said you told him at that time you desperately need change.
Desperately need change.
And you see the change he made. He put the same guy back in charge.
Put the same guy there. Now, but listen, let me finish telling you the whole thing. He says, yes, there would be change at USDA. So they came out, they called me and said, we're looking at Marsha Fudge. Is this someone you could support? I said, yes, absolutely. I could support Marsha Fudge. And we had some very lengthy conversations on what we were going to do to highlight the black farmers issue and move us a little further down the court if she would have become the Ag Secretary. Very excited about the name, and I have a great relationship with her. I was looking forward to her coming to USDA. This is the God's honest truth, people. At the 99th hour, the administration calls and they say, well, you know, we decided to send Vilsack back to agriculture because he has experience. And on the Zoom call with the president, I told him that Vilsack is not the right person for this time in history and not to send him back to USDA. And the Biden pushed back and said, well, he's going, and he's my choice here. And sending Marsha Fudge to the other agency, he called that. And I said, well, won't you send Vilsack there and send Fudge to agriculture? I think that'd be a much better swap, is what I was trying to get the administration to see. Long story short, they send Vilsack there. We get this bill passed, this historic bill that you already heard me describe the 30 plus years of fight to get it done. And then Vilsack drags his feet on executing debt relief for farmers of color. When subsidies are passed in Congress for primarily large white farmers in this country, the checks are in their bank accounts within days of the president signing the bill. And here we are almost, it is March. It's March again, people, a year later. And we still have not received debt relief. That's the difference. And I think if it had been large-scale white farmers that were waiting for debt relief, they would have found a way around this, some sort of way around this, to get resources into the hands of white farmers with planting season right around the corner. So we don't have the operating loans because USDA is now reporting us late to the credit reporting agencies. So it's going to be difficult for black farmers to get loans now. And we didn't get the debt relief that we thought we would have already. That's the type of continuing discrimination. I see it as harassment. It's almost like giving a child a Christmas present at Christmas and say, you know what, you can't have this present. You can't open the box now, but it's under the tree. That's the way I view debt relief, if I'm explaining that correctly.
Well, I pass it to Mike, to Brother Richard. You can clear me up in this, because when we had the attorney on, she said that at that time, none of the cases had been challenged.
Yes, we challenged the cases, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, yeah. I'm talking about as far as the administration. I'm not talking about private individuals. The administration hadn't challenged any of the cases that had been blocked, if I'm using the proper legal language. These different states. Go ahead.
And I want to clear something up, because I was on a show the other day, and one farmer was trying to tell me that the cases in Indiana are exempt from the court decision. No black farmer of color will receive any monies based on the two temporary injunctions that we have.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In place. And we have challenged and filed amicus briefs in all of the cases. So all of the history that I laid out to you is in all of the federal courts that white farmers have filed in 12 different complaints.
Okay.
So wherever they file something, we went right into those courts and challenged each and every one of those decisions. So that part... And we are part of the court record, the National Black Farmers Association and the Association of American Indian Farmers, the only two organizations that are part of those court cases. So I hopeful that we'll get our voices heard in those cases, because right now it's a tough row to hoe. My grandfather used that line. It's a tough row to hoe based on the cards that's laid out there in front of us. We're not getting the monetary support that we need to pay these attorneys. People say, well, you know, blacks are to represent, black attorneys are to do it for free. You know, when you do stuff for free, sometimes you don't do a good job at it. And then there's going to be some people that may argue with me on that. But we have to have resources to meet the needs of these 12 different complaints. White farmers are contributing to stop the payments to blacks and other farmers of color, but we're not contributing to defend these things and to have our voices heard in these 12 complaints.
Richard.
I want to follow up, and I wanted to maybe again have you repeat some things or even clarify. But one question, as you were laying out what has been done and is being done, as it relates to black people and the story you were dealing with in the county itself, would you say that black people understand what black farmers are going through? And I mean, black people in those counties who are to get the debt relief.
Well, let me try to explain it in a more clear fashion. Here you have in the front page of the New York Times last week, above the fold is the debt relief measure that's being blocked in federal court. Front page of the New York Times. And then you have certain black media that has it on page 17 in their publication, when it should be above the fold in black media. What big issue do we have that's holding up $5 billion that's going to be targeted towards black and other farmers of color in this country, people? And why aren't we talking about it? Why aren't we talking about PepsiCo, the way they dogged us? Why aren't we talking about John Deere? These are big issues, and instead of us highlighting them, we'll have, I'm going to call it junk and mess on social media that gets 5 million views. And then you have an issue, a very important issue like this, that's not getting the attention that it rightfully deserves. So we have to do better. Some things, there's clearly black and white in this country where whites are doing, such as filing these lawsuits. And then there's certain things that we have to do in the black community. We got to tighten up here, too.
Yes.
There's no reason why major athletes hasn't issued a statement supporting the National Black Farmers Association. There's no reason for major entertainers not to be supporting the National Black Farmers Association. And, you know, USDA sent out a series of letters after the debt relief measure was passed. So they sent a letter saying, you're going to get it. Check this box. Everybody sent the letter back in. They checked the box and said, look, I want the debt relief. I want the 120%. I checked the box. I sent it back in. I verified that I'm black at the bottom. I checked the box. As soon as that happened and white farmers sued us in court, USDA is now sending out a series of letters asking black and other farmers of color to renegotiate your deal. Or they're saying they're going to have to go ahead and foreclose on you. I see this as a pattern of continued discrimination, people, retaliation, and humiliation, all of these things, because the farmer planned for the debt relief. It's just like I described the kid at Christmas there that has the debt relief underneath the Christmas tree. You can see it, but you can't touch it, and you can't use it, and you can't open a box, people. And that's the way they've been doing blacks in this country for a very, very long time. They stole all the land from Indians. Did you hear the word I used? They stole all the good land from Indians, put them on a reservation that wouldn't grow anything. And now they want to take back all of the good land from blacks that they know are productive in this country. So this is all about the land. And with the whole hour I just described to you about what's going on, the end result is, at the end of the day, they want the land back, people. This is about the land.
But let me ask you this. And I know we have to go to the callers, but it's a couple of things that strikes me, you know, as point of clarification. So you said Sid and Stephen Miller. And when you say these large scale white farmers that are pushing this reverse discrimination, are you saying agribusiness farmers or just
individual farmers?
Individual farmers. That's what
individual. And I want to be specific. White men.
Right. Right. Right.
White men suing black farmers to say you shouldn't get this money. We don't want you to have this money. It's harmful to our farming operation. We see it as unconstitutional and reverse discrimination. And I laid it out for you in an hour why it's not.
Right. And I understand that. And the other one that I think I've heard and would like you to clarify, how did the banks, I thought I read, and Elliot, when we were talking with Attorney Crenshaw, she was making reference that
banks too. Yeah, they did.
Were involved in these court cases about, you know, black farmers getting this, you know, this debt relief. Am I correct that banks were?
Thank you for bringing that up, because the banks came out and sent a letter to the Ag Secretary and to the President and the leader and Speaker of the House, saying that black and other farmers of color receiving the debt relief also would be harmful to their financial institutions because it's going to pay the money off early. And it shows the mindset of anytime you say black and relief or black and money or black and Native American and financial institutions going to lend these people some money or something like that, all red flags come up. So instead of the bank saying, oh, well, they're going to get paid off early, well, let's pool together some more money and lend them 10 times what we lent the first time. That would be the right thing to do, right? You're getting all your money back, so you definitely would have a pool of money here.
Yes.
Somebody's going to have probably $1 billion, because maybe $1 billion or so are in guaranteed loans. So here's $1 billion or so in the pot. Why not say, well, instead of saying it's harmful, we're going to do $10 billion commitment to farmers of color to help them stay on the farm. They never want to help you is the example that I'm trying to say. And you in this case is black and other farmers of color. They want to keep it in. They want to keep it suppressed. They want to keep it scuffling and begging and fighting out here.
And the reason that that's important for us to see this, because as you're laying this out, and you've been laying it out, it reminds me of what happened during Reconstruction around the same thing, right? Around land and farmers. And that it's not just the white men farmers, it's the financial institutions also.
Yes.
She just laid out that they could make more.
Yes.
If they, you know, but they're aligning, like making this argument that they would be harmed because, you know, when they really, they're going to foreclose anyway.
That's right. That's what they're trying to do anyway. And that's the point I was trying to make, where the end result always seems to be land loss for blacks and the.
And my last question.
Yes.
The callers, and, you know, if that's okay with you, Elliot. Is in relationship to the response. Now, you have mentioned that Booker and Warnock, in relationship to pushing for the debt relief bill, were, should I say, instrumental, and also that Obama, also recently, in acknowledging, you know, as a propaganda, you know, self-congratulatory, you know, like, look what I have done for black farmers. With these groups, these 12 cases that are being moved around in these different states, in Texas, I get to see it's big. What have they said since then?
Well, the issue I was saying earlier, where white farmers never called me up and said, hey, board, we got a problem with you guys getting debt relief. Even after it passed, they didn't call and say, look, man, we got a problem with you guys getting this debt relief. They ran straight to the federal court and filed suit and said that these farmers shouldn't get it. That's the difference between black and white in this country. You know, I would have been saying this thing is unfair, or so on and so forth. They ran straight to the courts and said, "How do we stop them from getting? How do we stop them from getting justice? How do we stop them from getting the money?" And as it relates to Cory Booker and Senator Warnock, you know, for the first time in history, we got two blacks on the Senate Ag Committee. And I've been floating around the Hill since 1983, 39 years. And we've never had a black on the Ag Committee. For the first time in history, we got a black chairman of the Ag Committee in the House, Chairman David Scott. And they're trying to get him out now. These are two historic positions, and I believe if those two weren't on the Ag Committee, we wouldn't have got the $5 billion measure in the farm bill, in the COVID relief spending bill. And if we didn't have David Scott in the House as the House chairman, the first hearing that he had when they brought him in as the chairman was a full committee hearing on black farmers. And I've been trying to get a full committee hearing on black farmers since I've been floating around the Hill. So we have some key blacks in key positions, and I don't think we would have got the debt relief measure in there if it weren't for those players. Yes, we can do better in the black caucus. I'm not covering any dust for anybody here, people. But for those persons who had the guts and galls enough to stick it out with us and stick that thing in the COVID relief package and hold the administration accountable on it, you got to give them a thumbs up here. We actually wanted the whole Booker bill. I wanted the whole Booker bill in there. And some of the staff said, well, let's get this piece in and we'll come back and get the rest of it. I wanted to get the whole Booker bill in there, that we return the land to blacks and all of this stuff, man. I was pushing for the whole kit and caboodle and the Justice for Black Farmers Act, and we wind up getting the debt relief. I'll be honest with you, I didn't think it would make this big of a problem with white America. But it goes to show, anytime, like I said, you put black and money in the same sentence, all hell breaks loose, and nobody wants to see it happen.
And I'm just saying this in my closing, you know, understanding what you're saying in relationship to having these political positions, especially on that particular, from the Senate level and the congressional level, having these individuals, and even having a ex-president, but that is getting the debt relief bill going through. So what I surmise has nothing to do with the work that you have done and the assistance they have done and the political positioning that having them in these positions right now, how it has been helpful. But what I hear you saying in relationship to black people who are constituents in each of those states, the black media who is supposed to be able to sound the clarion call in relationship to making us aware of what's going, because what's being challenged, yes, is the land theft, but also what's being challenged, not even challenged, what's being reinforced by Sid Miller and Stephen Miller is the continuation of white domination over black's ability to have a productive asset.
That's called, true.
Right?
Absolutely true.
Those judges are being, and my last thought in this is that, because it's not just good enough for those in those positions of senators or congressional, having a congressional chair and or being an ex-president. And again, this is my view. If when it moves back to being the same old thing that the banks and white men farmers are saying to black folks, you're not going to have land, it's not just good enough for them to be able to say, well, at least I was able to get something that you didn't get. They also, as representatives, it seems to me, or at least also having a megaphone, like the communication, black communication, to be able to, if nothing else, in their constituency to say, look, this is what the condition is after we got them the money. Because they're in a position. I mean, other than that, and it may cost them, you know, votes. It may cost them position, but they have a bigger megaphone, and they're leaving it up to the National Black Farmers Association to do that heavy lifting by themselves, like they can. And yes, I don't think
I agree.
That's
I agree. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier. We got to do better. I mean, like I said, LeBron James. I'm just picking names off the top of my head. All these people in these various sports arenas. You know, Serena Williams and all of these, and the sister and Floyd Mayweather in the boxing world. All of these people that we have a voice that they can use. You know, they can say one sentence, man. We support the justice for black folks. I mean, something.
They used that correct me if I'm wrong, Elliot, they used that when they used those people that you just named or those like when the sports arenas based off of the taking of a knee and they needed people to be their representative. They brought out the JCs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Didn't they?
Well, and you know what? This is what I see happening. You know, we can be entertainers.
Yes.
We can entertain at the halftime PepsiCo show. We shouldn't be entertaining for PepsiCo or dancing for them either, man, when they won't provide a contract for black farmers in the country. So we can be entertainers and we can be athletes and perform on the field. But they don't want you to be the owner. They don't want you to be the person who's contributing to the actual corporation itself. So we got to get away from being just a consumer and start being owners. So we can start dictating the way that the lay of land is going to be laid out, people.
And they don't
that's what I see happening.
They don't want black people to have control over land.
No, no.
Laborers on land. We can be
on
land, which is pieces of the
land. And you know, Bill Gates got it figured out pretty good. I don't like the way he's doing, but he's buying land. He's using foundation monies from these other people and these corporations, and they're investing in land. And we have, like I said, entertainers and athletes, and we invest our monies in the wrong thing, cars and look good and all of these things. But we're not investing into land and infrastructure for our people. That's where you got to invest these dollars at. So that would be my, you know, message to the people who carry that kind of purse string. Invested in land. God don't make no more land. I don't care what your religion is, but God isn't making any more land. The production line comes down every day with these raggedy cars, man, and trucks that we line up to buy and wheels and all this other stuff that don't amount to anything in a few years. But down that assembly line isn't the thing called land. Just don't make any more of it, and we can afford a raggedy Mercedes Benz and a Cadillac. We can afford 5 acres in the country, so buy some land. And I'm gonna have to leave, but I certainly.
Well, Mr. Boyd, do me a favor, because I know that you're up against it. We got a few calls on the line. Can you take a couple of these calls?
Okay, I'll take them, and then I'll take a few questions.
Good. Let's go to 404 first in Atlanta. 404.
Hey, yes sir.
Yes sir.
Peace and blessings, Martin. Elliot, Rich, hey, Mr. Boyd, I think we related, man. My last name, Boyd. And if you could, yes, sir, from Kentucky. So check this out. I was told that we are Blackfoot Indian tribe, Native Americans, man. So you are Native American, brother. So you can put that on your.
Yes, we are. Yes, sir. We are. Well, it shows in my DNA, too. And I would love to have a conversation with you online.
Yes,
so we have Native American blood in our DNA. But you know, I still identify as a black man, and that's what they see, and that's what they treat me as. But you know, they dog Native Americans in this country, where they stole all the land from them and put them on reservations that wouldn't grow anything, people. So any land that was worth something, the whites took it, and they chased and run the Indians into desert land and mountains that wouldn't grow anything. So it's a historical pattern. What they did to natives is what they're doing to blacks and so on and so forth. So,
yes, sir. They tie them up. They tie them up, my brother. Okay. So
they tie,
whatever they try, that whatever they try to grow on their white land is going to fail. The crops don't get right now.
That's right. They won't have any good luck with it. Thank you,
brother
boy.
We got the power, man. We got the power.
And now, look, let me give you my number so we can talk.
Yes, sir.
804-804-691-8528.
Okay, my name Wesley, man. 8528.
Okay. Well, that's my middle
yes,
name.
Yes, sir. We going to talk.
John Wesley.
Yes, sir, man. Yes, sir. Okay. We related, bro. God bless you. And tell him about, I heard you say about Sonny Badu, that redneck Pecklewood SOB
yes,
man.
Yes, he's awful.
About Sonny Badu.
Sonny Badu was treated, he addressed the black farmers in the worst form of fashion, but we certainly didn't take it sitting down, you know. So he knows the deal, and, you know, he was the ag secretary. He suppressed us when he could, but he ain't there
yes,
no
sir.
More, you know. So,
that's 804-691-1852, right?
8528.
Okay, 8528.
That's
yes,
it.
Sir. I'll be calling you tomorrow, my brother.
Okay,
thank you for your contribution.
Man.
All right.
I appreciate it. Appreciate it, Elliot and Richard.
Right.
We got them, man. We got them, y'all.
Thank
they tie them up, man.
Right. Let's go to 601 in Jackson. 601. 601. Can you hear me, Jackson? 601. Jackson.
Yes.
Yes.
Carlton Sanders here.
Yes, sir.
Just want to know, I spoke to Senator Scott a number of times, and I had 7 broiler houses, and I was worth over $1.5 million.
Oh, wait a minute.
And,
this is the call. This is Carlton Sanders for the Cook Foods lawsuit.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So I was worth over $1.5 million, and I did an excellent job, and I got no help at all. Senator Warnock was mad, very angry. Senator David Scott spoke with all of them. Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren. I went to Washington 4 times, and I've spoken to basically all of them that were listening.
Yeah.
And
now your contract. Now, who is your contract with? What?
Cook
what,
Food.
It was with who?
Cook Food.
Okay. All right. That helps me. Well, I'll tell you what. Okay. Go ahead.
So I lost everything. I foreclosed on. They wanted me to upgrade, and
yes.
The bank said no. I only had a year left. A year. And
to pay off your houses.
That's
you only
the
had a
house.
Yeah, go ahead. That's right.
And they foreclosed on me. And that
yes.
was so bad. I done went from 70,000 to, I mean, 700,000 to 70.
Yes.
And it'd like to kill me. It gave me a stroke and, you know, a light heart attack from worrying about that. And then they had court and they told me they gave me so many days to get out, and I had to do that. And that was the most embarrassing thing I ever had, to treat me like a criminal. And I've been a deacon of the church for 32 years. And like I said, you know, I'm an outstanding citizen.
Yeah,
and it was just hard for me to just take that. Like that, it was hard. So
did
some
you file suit against them, or
did you file suit
against the company, or
I do, and it's still pending.
Okay.
And like I said, I didn't get that money the first time, and
yes.
You know, I'm wondering what's going on, Miss Crenshaw.
Now listen, now do you have? I'm sorry, I have a question for you. Do you have a debt with? Was the loan with USDA, or was it a guaranteed loan? The USDA
it was just a bank. It was just a bank loan. I tried getting that, and they wouldn't let me have it. They kept lying about it, and that's what made Senator Warnock and David Scott mad, because they said why the FHA didn't try to help me, USDA loan, you know, and I didn't get no help from no one. Everything was just dirty and dirtier. Yeah, so I lost everything I had, and I'm on the side of the road right now, living just pitiful. And I never anticipated anything like that. So,
Well, look, I'm going to have a more in-depth conversation with you about it. And can you give us a call tomorrow so we can talk about this for that Definitely want to see how we can help and work with your legal team. Because I was a poultry grower for 14 years with Purdue, and they did the same thing. As soon as I was able to just about to pay the house off, they took my contract.
Well, I went from 700,000 down until 70. And if I know,
only had 1 year left on my contract.
That's what I had.
And they pulled the rug from underneath me.
That's what happened to me.
Wow.
And they wanted me to lose the farm. I had some family members that was able to step up and help me.
Right.
So I went to my family, my brother who was in the military, who had saved up some money, helped me. And I paid that part of the note off, and I was able to hold on. But that's what they do to blacks. They put you out there, and generally now, I don't know your name, but what they'll do is they'll have another, what they call grower, who's a white person. They'll put them in the houses, and then the company will make the improvements on the building and put them on the farm, on your farm, where they could have done the same thing for you.
Right.
The incubator, the processor, in my case was Purdue. They could have made the upgrades to the building and took a little bit out your check every week in order for you to maintain and keep your contract. So it's done by design to try to pull the rug from underneath you. And like I said, they have another farmer in the area that they will be interested in putting in your chicken house on your land. It's another part of the saga that we face as part of that systematic discrimination that I talked about. Like with PepsiCo and these incubators, such as these chicken processors and hog facilitators, they're all doing the same thing, and it's all by design. So we got to get organized. And so I need you to call me. I'm gonna give you my number. I gave it to the last person to call, but it's 804-691-8528. Again, that's 804-691-8528. And I want to set aside a little time where we can get into more of the detail and who your attorney is and that kind of thing so we can work together and strategize on this.
Okay, definitely.
Okay.
Thank you for your contribution. You. Be in touch.
Thank you.
Let's go to grab one more maybe.
Okay.
Before you go, let the boy. Let's go to 7. Wait, let's go to 334 in Montgomery. 334?
Okay.
Good evening, everyone, and it's a pleasure listening to you, Mr. Boyd. I'm curious to know, what are some of the activities in the state of Alabama that you may have heard or come across with regards to black farmers?
Well, as it relates to what is going on a national scale, that's why I wanted to make very clear, when I was speaking about the debt relief earlier.
Uh-huh.
There is no state that's exempt from that. The largest recipient states that are black is Alabama and Mississippi. So those two states have more people getting that should have gotten debt relief than all of the other states. So the two largest states recipients are Alabama and Mississippi that's going to receive the debt relief. So that's why we're really pushing to get those monies and the debt written off and the 20% into the farmers' hands so that we can free their farms up and they can, try to have a jump start in their farming career. So that's why we put all of our efforts into it. But we have two websites, National Black Farmers Association.org, Black Farmers with a S.org. We have a scholarship program. A really good scholarship program that people can go out and we're trying to put more young blacks back into farming and agribusiness. So we need people to circulate that information about our scholarship program. And we have a national outreach program. We don't turn anybody away at the National Black Farmers Association. We're in 46 states, and we've been around since the 80s. And very, very limited funding, so we do. We're doing this work, people, on the shoestring, but by the grace of God, we're hanging in here and fighting.
All the very best to you, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for your contribution. Mr. Boyd, before I let you go, we got to get you back on
Yes,
to,
I would love to come on.
To talk about.
I'm going to catch my breath because and we have, like I said, we have a summary judgment that we're fighting in Florida. And I would like to come back on after we find out which direction that's going in. And mm-hmm. I'd like to come back on and update you on the process and where we are.
That'd be great. Like and
come back in the coming weeks. And I know we put it on our website, but we'd like to get more participation from especially rural America, get more listeners on a show like this, because these type of flat platforms, I have a little more time to go into more detail than you do on the CNN or something like that, where the interviews are very short.
Yes.
And the coverage that we're getting in the national news, such as the New York Times, it doesn't give the in-depth reporting like all of the issues that I just laid out about why it's not reverse discrimination. And I laid it out for you, you know, that whites been getting the money the whole time and blacks been getting dogged the whole time. So those type of points don't make it into the national media. So I definitely would like to come back on.
Yeah, I'll get the information from you and I'll put some of the things on the website as far as the contacts, the and some of the other things. And also, when you come back on, we'll talk about some solutions also, because
I want to get into that because that's what my wife is blowing in my head. So I definitely want to come back in and talk about the three branches of government and their roles in this thing, so people understand. I made it clear. I made it clear that no farmer and no state can get the debt relief unless it's resolved in federal court. So
good.
I think everybody understands that. Definitely would like to come back on and talk about what we're doing from an organizational standpoint, because I really didn't get into that, and what programs we're doing, such as a scholarship program, and I'll talk about some solutions, some possible solutions when I come back.
We'll talk to you soon, and tell the missus thanks.
Yes, sir. I know you can hear her. I know you can hear her. She wears me out, so you know how it is. She stays right there on it, and she's on top of the issue, and she's talking to these farmers every day, so she knows.
All right.
The pain and suffering, man. And you heard it from that poultry grower down there, man. It's pain and the suffering, and I feel his pain, and I want to help him. So I don't want to be one of them guys that said, man, didn't try to help me. We're trying to help the farmers, and we're doing the best we can, but we need more support from the general black community. I don't know how to say it any more clear than that. We can't do this without you, you know?
And you have to reach out to us beforehand, not once you're
going to. Right, and that's a part of the problem. Many of the farmers, and then I'm gone, reach out to us when it's 2 days before the foreclosure.
Okay.
And if you're getting a letter 6 months before that, you need to be calling me when you get that first letter. Don't wait till 2 days before the auction and then call us and we're trying to pull some rabbits out some hat, because it's tough.
I'll reach out to you soon.
Thank you, brother. God bless you.
Thanks.
And definitely enjoyed this.
All right. We're going to take a brief break, Richard. When we come back, we'll just spin off an open forum with some of the callers. You can get involved. There's a lot of things going on. 215-490-9832. It's 215-490-9832. It's the contact number. Richard, I just want to say you heard some common things being echoed by a man that have went out there and become head of an organization. You heard his story when he took over the farm and the challenges that he faced. But it takes individuals, Richard, to go out and say, I'm going to do something about this and try to organize. Because you talk about that a lot. That's a talent and skill, Richard. And everybody might not be capable of doing that. But we can join in with people that do have the fortitude and the capability to do that. Your volume, I didn't hear you.
I said right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just you know, because I heard him talk about the need for, and not only that, the need for black media to be involved. And black media talking about other things and majoring in the minors and performing at Super Bowls and all this other stuff while real issues is going on that affect our community.
That's definitely a fact.
Yeah, we're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we'll transition to open forum. I'll throw out a few things that might be interesting, but it's up to the callers. You can bring anything you want to the table. You can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. Amen. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we are black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up, and that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip, and you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and I want to thank our guests that spent some time with us, President of the National Black Farmers Association, John Boyd. We'll try to get him on maybe next month to get a little update, recap, and talk about some solutions to move our people forward and deal with the plight of our farmers, because we don't have to keep depending on Europeans for solutions. We got to keep pressure on them as far as redressing the harm that they have caused, but we don't have to wait on them for any solutions for our people. We're going to have to do this ourselves. Richard.
When I hear this and you see, it took me back as I was listening to Dr. Boyd, to the Reconstruction period, when the same issue about land and what was going on. And as you said, we have to get better at that. But, if it's possible, Elliot, one person he said, that whole thing about who became the USDA head and who he wanted to be head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have no other way to say it. It's interesting to find out what was the shenanigans that went on, right, that prevented who he wanted. Who he suggested, obviously he was in direct communication with Biden, right? Biden obviously knew what was done under him before by Vilsack?
Vilsack, yeah.
That, as it relates to the black farmers. But you see the switcheroo that went on.
Yeah.
And then, cases it was about land. And what I wanted to do, I just want at one point to play what the HUD's now head secretary, Marcia Fudge, what she says in her position at HUD, what she could have been at USDA at some point, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
My look back at the 150 years, I'm fond of doing arithmetic.
I'm thinking I'm at the right place, and I'm at the wrong place.
You want to hold off on it till you get it together?
I got it.
Okay.
Absolutely right. Mm-hmm. We did not benefit from the opportunity zones in a way that we should have. Very few people did. They didn't create a lot of jobs, and we didn't get the resources that we should have.
So how do you fix it moving forward, or do you abandon it?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that we do the assessment that we are now doing to determine how we can make it better. I think that once you have something like that that has the potential to really help our people, then you don't just throw it out.
Mm-hmm. And that's not the first time. Like, there was, they had legislation like that before, right? It just wasn't called Opportunity Zone.
Right. It was called Empowerment Zone.
Empowerment Zone.
Close.
Mm-hmm.
But empowerment zones were really very different because at the time,
Ms. Fudge, I just need you to put the mic a little closer.
So we can at the time, we made sure that people in our communities received those resources.
Mm-hmm.
You will find Black businesses today that will say to you that they became millionaires because of empowerment zones. We've not created any Black millionaires from the federal government in a very long time.
Mm.
And so we have to find a way to increase not just the opportunity, but we have to be intentional about making sure that Black people get a piece of the pie. So as we look at what we do at HUD, and we're looking at this now across all of government, we're increasing at least by 50% the participation in our purchasing. It's going to be $100 billion over the next 5 years. And we're making sure that our people get a piece of that pie. And that's what I think all of it should be about.
Yeah, Richard.
Well, because we have been instructed, directed, actually, by the president.
Yes. Richard, you know what? You get me cussing on the air. That's bullshit. You remember, we went over before. All of these presidents from Reagan on, had some old type of name that's supposed to be addressing this stuff that's going on in the Black communities. Obama had the empowerment zone. Trump had a name. I forgot Trump's name for his thing. All of them. Your mic is down. I can't hear you. Clinton had a name. They all had a name. But black they wasn't developing any Black businesses in Black communities. These one or two millionaires she's talking about is poster boys for whatever crap that they think that they're doing. They ain't helping Black people buy this stuff. Now, listen, Mr. Boyd is out there helping farmers. And he's doing what he can. But for him to think that Fudge would have been any different than Vilsack, and he's misinformed. Well, I don't want to say he's misinformed. It's false hope. She would have been the same as Vilsack and maybe worse.
The thing, as you're saying, is that the concerted effort, and I think it's important to go over what he said, right?
Yeah, thank you, Brother Otis. Opportunity Zones was under Trump. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And because HUD is also dealing with land. I don't know if ever, I mean, it's a housing, right? Housing is on land. It's just a different type of land, right? So I agree with you. But the thing is, and this is what he was saying when he, you know, as I took it, when we're looking at the Black community itself, how are we organized to protect our land and to protect our farmers, the Black journalists and communication outlets, whether they, you know, whether they're blogs or journalists, what they are doing, what we are doing in order to advocate for Black farmers, and also for, because even in her example, she could, you know, or what you're saying, because to me, HUD is dealing with land. It might be dealing with houses, but it's still dealing with land in relationship to, and when you're talking about whether they did it or not with opportunity zones or not, that, you know, here was a direct opportunity with Black farmers to create millionaires, right? But the banks, the U.S., the federal system, and the judges, the farmers, white farmers and judges, are working in concert to prevent. And that's and so it's not about her, but it's about what they're doing in order to, and what we have to do to protect that from them.
You're absolutely right. It's a system. It's a system. It's a, you know, some Black folks think that because they see these whites running around with a hood on their head, they're white supremacists. It's a system, just like you just stated. The politicians, the banks, and these judges are in concert against the farmers in particular, because that's who we was talking about tonight, but Black people in general.
Right.
It's part of a system. And they uphold it well.
And you see what they're saying, what they're pushing, and this this goes to that equal protection, which we seen earlier, you know, about, you know, the whole thing. Are we a protected class? Because what they're raising now, we can't even use discrimination. Because they're saying, if you give something to them for them, then you're discriminating against them. And these are court cases that are coming on. So for the next generation, they won't even have the ability to say that they're being discriminated against.
Exactly. Look, excuse me. I want to play a clip from that State of the Union. But before I do that, let me go to Newport News. Newport News, are you there? Newport News?
Hey, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. It's muffled.
It's muffled. Hold on. Let's try this.
Can you hear me now?
Agree. Yeah, yes, it's 100% better.
Pardon me?
It's 100% better.
Okay, I just want to throw in something. I heard the gentleman talk about farming. 1.5 years ago, I told you a story about my family's land. So I'm going to say this, you're fast and marketed, but people can actually Google it. Almost as much land was also stolen from homeowners throughout the Black community through eminent domain and land development. I found that out from my family's history. Later, I ended up talking about it on the Brett Carnell show. And I had no idea what he wanted. So I'm going to say to you, but I'm going to say this to you. The most interesting thing I've ever heard a Black lawyer say is, I don't know if you saw The View with that guy, Emmy Mystal, Mystal, the brother with the big afro.
No. In fact, your audio, Brother Odie, your audio, I think what you're saying is important, but your audio is not right. If you want to maybe come back on, come back or whatever,
okay.
Your audio.
All right, I'll do that.
If you can reach another way.
All right.
And then when I see you pop back on, I'll get you back on. Richard, let me, I want to play this clip from the, because I didn't catch all of it, but as soon as I turned it on, I heard some interesting things before I cut it off. In fact, when I turned it on, I stayed with it, even though I was doing some other stuff, and watched some of the CBC after it was over, running up to Biden, holding his hand, taking selfies, majority of them wearing Ukraine pins, you know. That's what they're there for. Just like you said, they're political entrepreneurs. But let me play this clip here, and then I want to mention some things in reference to it. Because he said something let me play this. It's interesting.
Let's not abandon our streets or choose between safety and equal justice. Let's come together and protect our communities, restore trust, and hold law enforcement accountable. That's why the Justice Department has required body cameras, banned chokeholds, and restricted no-knock warrants for its officers.
Now, wait a minute, Richard, because he starts talking about the police. Mm-hmm. And he talked about a segment of the community that wanted change. Now, that segment of the community was Black people that put his old behind in office. But he didn't say, he said a segment of the community. Now, he said that they ban chokeholds and no-knock warrants. As I recall, Amir Locke up there in Minneapolis just got killed with a no-knock warrant.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge signed that order. The same judge that was over that Derek Chauvin trial. He signed the order for the no-knock warrant.
Right.
So, what is this that he's talking about? He must live in an alternate universe, because that's not what's happening out here that affects Black people every day. In fact, it's kind of strange. You know, Minnesota, Minneapolis has a population, according to statistics, of 18% Black people in that city. But they managed to find Blacks and kill them, law enforcement. I mean, George Floyd was killed, supposedly passed a $20 bill, so he was killed. Philando Castile getting picked up from work by his wife. I think his wife and his young child or his girlfriend, whatever, his significant other and the young child pick him up from work. He gets gunned down in front of him, sitting in the car. And then this young man, 22 years old, they kick in his door at 3 a.m. and shoot him in the bed all in about 9 seconds. So these no-knock warrants that was banned that Biden said, I don't know where he's talking about or where he's living at. Now, let me continue.
Body cameras, banned choke calls, and restricted no-knock warrants for its officers. That's why the American Rescue Plan that you all provided, $350 billion that cities, states, and counties can use to hire more police, invest in more proven strategies.
Okay, he said the American Rescue Plan allocated $350 billion to the cities for these purposes, right?
Right.
Let me read this from a published report. Excuse me. When Biden signed the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan into law last March, he funded federal programs designed to address the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, but the bill also provided $350 billion in aid sent directly to states, counties, and local governments to spend as they saw fit. Now, that's not what he said in that State of the Union address. He associates it with policing and them doing better, getting better police-wise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me continue. Now, I'll read that last sentence again. But the bill also provided $350 billion in aid sent directly to states, counties, and local governments to spend as they saw fit. It was almost unprecedented amount of money. According to an analyst from the Pew Charitable Trust, states receive aid equivalent to anywhere from 4.9% in Wisconsin to 22.7% in Wyoming. This eclipsed their spending in their previous fiscal year. So wait a minute, Richard. Some of the money that they got eclipsed what they even spent in a whole year of a budget, some of these states. It says most states have a legal obligation to balance their budgets, which means unexpected surpluses like this is rare. It's not clear yet where all this money will go. States have an enormous amount of leeway as to how they'll spend it until 2026, and they have till 2026 to do so. So it's a lot of latitude and leeway how they can spend the money.
Right.
That's not what was stated in that State of the Union that black people jumped up, black representatives jumped up and was clapping about. They should know this. Either they're stupid or they trying to use you and think you're stupid. But they should know this. And if they don't, they need to step down out of them offices because they don't represent me or you. Now, hold it. Now, let me finish. In Oklahoma, for example, Governor Kevin Stitt ended the enhanced unemployment benefits available to many workers during the pandemic and used the Oklahoma's rescue plan money last spring for $1,200 bonuses to over 20,000 people who stopped collecting unemployment and started full-time working again. Meanwhile, in Vermont, they used the rescue plan money to provide free classes to state college workers who wanted to change careers. Washington State used the money for paid leave program. While there are variations from state to state, they will determine the recovery landscape for millions of Americans. So far, 22 states have allocated over $7 billion for broadband. Infrastructure has always been a big priority in states like Florida, which is spending their money on highways and transportation projects that have long been planned but unfinished. Broadly, states are allowed to replace revenue lost during the pandemic, and how local lawmakers define those challenges and decide how to address them varies widely. In Alabama, the money was allocated to build two new prisons. So this is just an example of what this money is being used for and planned to be used for. It ain't being used to help you in no inner city or help you in any way. And it'll probably be used to fund police. But their practices and modes of how they deal is not changing. So I just picked out two, and I didn't even listen to all that crap. I don't even know what I was doing. But it, just in that little brief time I heard, I picked out two things that's a blatant misrepresentation of the facts. And let me play that, the remainder of that, before I let that go. I'll play the remainder of it.
That cities, states, and counties can use to hire more police, invest in more proven strategies. Proven strategies like community violence interruption, trusted messengers, breaking the cycle of violence and trauma, and giving young people some hope. We should all agree the answer is not to defund the police. It's to fund the police. Fund them. Fund them.
He gonna fund them, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
He don't want to hear what you're saying. He gonna fund the police, give them all the resources they need. Although all that money ain't being used for that at all. You've seen where some of the money being used to build prisons, to put you in for highways and construction that's unfinished projects, and they ain't gonna hire you on those highways to do anything. Some of the other ones used for retraining to in what Vermont. It's used for classes for people who wanted to change careers. They was using the money for that. And you know the population of blacks in Vermont. So that money ain't being used to help you. See, you know, come on with this stuff. The information got to be dispensed to our people. Just like John Boyd said, we don't use these mediums, and especially black media, to dispense information that's going to educate our people to the situation that they're in. You know, that scenario that Boyd gave about him going in there to that county office and asking for money, Richard, is almost the same as Mr. Sanders when he talked about the interaction that he had with the county office. Wow. You would think those men, it was back in 1910 or something like that, what was going on and the language being used at them in reference to them. You would think it would have been back in the time of our grandparents. This stuff was going on. What did he say? In the 90s?
Right. 1980.
Wow. I just wanted to throw those two things out about that.
It's important. It's important.
And another thing I want to mention, too, because I found it funny. You know, we talked about that Ukraine last week. Now, a couple of days ago, Mitch McConnell, he's from Kentucky, Lindsey Graham, he's from South Carolina, and Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat from Rhode Island, said that they wanted money allocated, emergency money allocated for the Ukraine. Richard.
Yep.
Now, let me read this from Politico, and it was out a couple days ago. It says, from a published report, Congress wants to spend $10 billion, in emergency funding. It is likely to be included in a package to aid Ukraine, with the majority of that money going towards helping refugees. We will work hand in hand with the administration. If they need something sooner, we'll deliver something sooner, says House Intelligence Chair Adam Schiff, Democrat from California, on Thursday. But I'm very confident that both parties understand the importance of providing assistance to Ukraine and to our NATO allies, and we will do that as promptly as necessary. Now, $10 billion to help the Ukraine and towards refugees, the same ones that were throwing black folks off the trains, abusing black women trying to get on trains and letting white folks on, and even white folks with their dogs would get on before black people, because the train is the only way out of Ukraine. They ain't flying out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me continue on that. It says Senator Chris Coons from Delaware, who chairs the Appropriation Committee at the State Department and for Foreign Operations, told reporters Friday morning that any supplemental funding would likely exceed $10 billion, the majority of which would go towards addressing the impending refugee crisis in Europe. If we are not doing everything possible, then we are doing not enough, says Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. Time is not on our side. Graham said that he told Biden administration emergency spending for the Ukraine would get broad bipartisan support and that Senate would pass such a bill next week when the members return to Washington. Senator Jim Reinch of Idaho, the top Republican at the Foreign Relations Committee, agreed. What is appropriate won't be hard to settle on under the current circumstances. The Biden administration has already sent $200 million worth of anti-armament missiles, ammunition, and other military equipment to the Ukraine. In addition, the State Department has authorized $6 billion to Poland. Just yesterday, the Pentagon announced the deployment of 7,000 more troops to Germany. A senior defense official said the moves aims to reassure NATO allies. So all of these things is going to the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. They have told the Congress, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, who's Republicans, black folks sworn enemies, and this White House, Sheldon Whitehouse, who is a so-called liberal from Rhode Island. It's the same Sheldon Whitehouse, Richard, that last year investigative reporters uncovered that him and his wife is a member of this exclusive all-white country club that doesn't allow blacks. And when it hit the media, he turned around and threw his wife under the bus saying, well, she's a member, I'm not. Hmm. So, you know, these three have said that, well, this is going to be passed through the Congress so we can approve it at the Senate. And it's going to get done by next week. But then you got blacks and the CBC, which is the largest group there among those lawmakers, if I'm not mistaken. You can help me on that, Richard. That are basically being directed that this is what you're going to do. Even though George Floyd policing bill, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, reparations, none of these things is fast track. They don't even want to talk about them. But when things come up to help their racist brethren over there, they want blacks to rubber stamp it. And some of them don't mind rubber stamping it, running around with flag pins on their lapels, talking stupid in front of the press about their lockstep with NATO and Ukraine. When if they were over there, their butts would have been forced off trains, thrown off trains and everything else. And when you looked at the popular media, you didn't see all that. They had plenty of reporters, ABC, NBC, at these train stations interviewing people. And then afterwards they give, you know, little, clips before they end their reporting segment. Right. None of them interviewed any of these students. Or they don't all have to be students because you got people living and working there. None of them interviewed them about what they were dealing with. You only seen that on social media and on YouTube when some of the people put the information on there and their experiences. You didn't see that in popular media. They weren't even talking about it.
Nope.
I just figured I'd throw that out there. Let me go to the phones and see if anybody got any comments the rest of the way in this open forum. Let's go to 678 in Atlanta. 678? 678, are you there?
Just listening.
Okay. Let's go to 505. 505.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Listen, man, you got me over here cracking up, man, about it. You look at what's going on in there. In the Ukraine, with all these refugees. I was just watching 60 Minutes just a little while ago, and they're showing you how these people are getting on these trains and going to Poland, and the people, when they get to Poland, they're giving them water and clothes and coats, and they can go to these NATO countries for, they give them something like 3 years to stay there. You know what I mean? I mean, you got homeless people in the United States, especially in California, San Francisco. They're sending all this money to these poor. These people will come here from the Ukraine. They're supposed to be refugees. They'll come here. They'll take your job, treat you like you're a second or third class citizen, and you're black. You've been born and raised here, been here since 1619. You know, this whole system is just full of shit. I don't know why black people don't just get it. Just understand, they don't want you. Your job is done. You picked up all, picked all the cotton. I mean, they don't need you no more. You have no need to them whatsoever. You can't go to Africa because they got them people over there brainwashed. I've been over there. People over there dying. I mean, I get his, I don't care what nobody say. I get his white boy credit. He knows he's a grandmaster bullshitter, and people are buying into this lock, stock, and barrel. I don't know what this man has got that these people believe everything they tell them. I'm 81 years old. Since I've been born, they've been at war with somebody. If it ain't us, it's the Nazis. If it ain't the Nazis, it's now it's Putin. What's going on with Putin? Something is going on. They're trying to take his country. They're trying to eliminate this clown senator. Here's a senator. This white boy from South Carolina, I forget his name. He said they need to go over there and take Putin out. I mean, this guy is supposed to be a sophisticated senator. But this is what they're really showing their colors now. This is what they've been doing all the time. They took Malcolm out. They took Martin Luther King out. I mean, they just take you out, eliminate you when they get tired of you, listen to your mouth. Or maybe they feel you can be effective. But these Negroes still believe. I'm watching this Kamala vice president. I'm watching this Biden give this State of the Union message. All bullshit. She's sitting up there like a clown, clapping and jumping around. I mean, it's embarrassing, man. It's embarrassing. Don't take the job if you're going to be a clown, because that's all they're going to use you for. The black people put this man in office. He's talking about refunding the police. These are the people who's killing everybody. He's talking about not defund, refund. This is what he said. Now he's in office. He can talk that shit. But the black people still go along with this bullshit, man. It amazes me every day. What does these people got? What are they offering that these people are still? It just blows my mind, man. All these dudes got to do is show up. You can be talking amongst yourselves. All they got to do is just show up. They got everything stops. But the white boy's here. He must have be coming with something more important than we're talking about. Elijah Muhammad was right. I didn't agree with all his antics and master for all his nonsense. But when it came down, Marcus Garvey, he said, listen, man, you got all that land in Africa, and you're here begging these people. These people don't want you. They don't dig you. They don't like you. They want to be hip. They want to know your music. They want to know how to dance. But they don't want you. They want what you have to offer. Once they learn all this shit, copy the jazz, you name it. They're good. They copy everything. They didn't originate nothing. See? They didn't originate everything they got, they stole from somebody else. They ain't not a damn thing, these people that I can see. Anything dealing with destruction, they down with that. When it comes to destroying shit, they're good at that. But when it comes about socializing man to man, being sociable, treating people like you would like to be treated, that's bullshit. They don't even know what that's a dirty word. But these people still running behind these people like they got something to offer. These people ain't got nothing to offer you, nothing but straight up death. I tuned in late when the brother was talking about the land situation, about blacks owning land. Hey, listen, it wasn't even on the I don't even know how to express it. It's not even in them. They had no intention of giving you no damn land. 40 acres and a mule. I mean, it's all a con game. But these people keep still buying in. I remember King said one time about going in, trying to live in a burning house. I mean, when did the black people come to the realization that you are not wanted? They don't want you. They want what you might have to offer for a minute. They get the rap music. They make hustle off that. Anything, I mean, they vote, like Malcolm said, they vultures. They live off your blood. But they don't get it. What is the problem, man? Hey, well, here's a man got a knee on a man's neck. And it's all over the media. I'm watching this. I just got a knee on the man's neck. They don't get it. They're going to kill you in every way they can find that's going to just be justified with why they did whatever they did. I'm 81 years old. I don't see shit happening.
Well, one of the keys that, and we're going to move on, but one of the keys is this, because whites didn't even though this stuff has been going on and we know it, whites didn't react until they seen video of this cop killing that man on television. Let me say this. And then they react with surprise and amazement, saying, we shouldn't do this. But one of the keys is putting this information to our people. Our people are not stupid. Put the information to them, and some of our people, at least an operating mass of people, will start to move.
Yeah, okay.
This man He conducts a misinformation campaign on black folks, and he uses other blacks. You heard the man talk about ones in entertainment. He used other blacks that have the eye of people to conduct this misinformation. Go in every city. Go in any city and turn on your radio and try to look for some black programming and see what you hear. You'll hear Steve Harvey or some old Amos and Andy type of show in the mornings or the midday. But you use that same radio and tune around, and you'll get white folks talking about issues on stations. You'll be hard-pressed to find that same type of thing among black folks. And being that we don't control the media by and large, they make sure that they put these blacks on with all this Amos and Andy satire and giggling and laughing 24/7 days a week. It ain't that much giggling and laughing in the world.
Oh, man.
But you can use your same radio. You don't hear those type of programs, giggling and laughing, all kind of stupid crap. You don't hear that among these white folks. They're talking about issues that they feel will affect them. So all I'm saying is, we got to use these mediums to get out information. That's what me and Richard try to do. We're not alone. There's other people doing the same thing. But we just
got a good job, man.
We just got to keep pressing at it. People will get it.
All I can tell you, if you don't have something that will hurt these people to know will hurt you, you can talk to you blue in the face. You can't you can't talk to these people. One-on-one, because they've been so brain. I live out here in the middle. I have never seen black people I've been in a lot of places in the United States. I have never seen black people like the black people out here in New Mexico. I have never seen black folks with the mentality of these people out here. It's just every day it blows my mind. I mean, I could be in Walmart or any supermarket picking up a dish, and I'll see a sister or a brother coming, and hey, how you doing, man? But they will put their head down. I mean, I had to follow a dude around in the store one day. I said, what's the problem? What's the matter, man? I said, don't you see me talking to you? I mean, and the dude is backing away from me like I got a cone on my head or something and a white sheet. I said, what is wrong with you people? I'm telling you, man. Listen, man. Y'all doing a listen. fantastic program. Kamal turned me on, Joe, a couple of months ago. Kamal Cambon, because I knew him since he was a kid. And he said, you got to check these cats out. But let me tell you something, man. Just being out here, I've been out here since 2013 because I ride horses. That's the main reason why I came through here. But what I've encountered since I've been out here amongst these so-called African-Americans, whatever they call, I mean, they are just, they're pitiful, man. I have never seen the brainwashing to this degree until I moved out here. I lived in New York most of my life and other times spent overseas in the military, traveling around Europe and whatnot. But to come back to the United States and to move out here and to be around these people, I mean, it's like I'm on another planet. On another planet. A couple of them got rested, little jobs, but they're so clannish. See, when you come in, you would think they would show you around and just, and these people back off you like you got the plague. I have never seen nothing like this. And then I hear you guys come on with these programs, and I'm saying to myself, maybe I'm going crazy. I mean, there are still people out here who understand and think like I do when I listen to the radio. And then I turn the radio up and go out to Mars and run into these clowns, and it's just like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just unbelievable. But listen, y'all keep up the good work. I'm going to listen. I done called more friends of mine that wasn't aware of this program. But Ochi on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, people like that. I said, you got to turn these people on, man, and listen to these programs. Because, man, you're talking about work. I don't know how that's going. I don't see it.
Well, we're going to make it through, brother. Listen, I'll leave you with this.
I'm supporting you 100%, man, as best I can to keep you all on the air, to keep you all keeping this flow going. Because, my man, I don't know if you ever been out here. This is great. Go ahead, man. You go ahead. Finish talking, because I tell you, this is
well, I'll leave you with this, because history only repeats itself. Our ancestors in the early 1860s, when they were on those plantations, some of them thought that this is the way of life. This is how it is. You've seen some of our ancestors that wanted freedom at all costs, but they never seen a scenario where they would be able to free themselves from those plantations. And it happened. In fact, whites, by and large, never wanted them to come off the plantation. You've seen Lincoln said to himself that he wouldn't have ended slavery. He had no intention of doing that. But circumstances enabled our people to free themselves, at least from those physical shackles. Things are going to happen again. We just got to be prepared to take control of our situation when it happens. The opportunity is going to happen again. History, don't be void. It always is circular. It's secular. Am I right, Richard? These things are going to come around again.
Bro, I ain't going to be here. I mean, I just turned 81 yesterday. I ain't going to be here to see none of that. All I've ever seen is the negative part, all the bad stuff.
Well, your ancestors are going to be here, and they're going to do it for you. Your descendants will be here, and they're going to do it on your behalf.
I got two grandsons. One is 9 and one is 4. I don't know if they're going to survive. You understand? Because this stuff, there's no defense. There's no nothing. It's just, these people just come right in. Like they did that girl's apartment in Kentucky, just come shoot through and all this. No, I mean, it's just all bullshit, man. That's all I can tell you. It's all, but I'm watching how they, with the Ukraine, I'm seeing the effect of what happened. Whitey is attacking Whitey, and they think the black. I tell them, look, don't call me to help nobody, because you ain't did shit for me to this day. So don't call me about no Ukraine and none of that bullshit, because I ain't buying into it. Because them same people will come here in a plane tomorrow and get first class, the whole nine, give them everything. And you've been here since 16, 19, you ain't got, you still trying to get some land. I mean, it's just a bunch of bullshit, man. But listen, y'all carry on, man.
Thanks for your contribution.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Richard, I can hear the frustration in the caller. But listen, the darkest hour, what do they say? The darkest hour is just before dawn. So, you know, we just got to keep pushing. You can't give up. We got a few more callers on here. You know, Richard, the caller made something in reference to the violence and the violent spirit of the people that we're among. If we know anything about our history and culture, we didn't come from a violent society. Looking at other people with a jaundiced eye, wanting to take from other people, wanting to kill other people without provocation or cause. So it's a different type of environment that we've always lived in since we've been here. Some of that ignorance has spilled over to our people, and they don't know why they're caught up in this type of stuff, and racism and the environment we live in have a lot to do with it. But I just want to read this before we go to the rest of the callers in reference to what the brother just stated about the violence of this society. And check this out, Richard. It's come from a published report in January of this year. It says the Pentagon has finally published their first air power summary since Joe Biden took office nearly 1 year ago. These monthly reports have been published since 2007 to document the number of bombs and missiles dropped by U.S.-led air forces in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria since 2004. President Donald Trump stopped publishing them after February 2020, shrouding continued U.S. bombing in secrecy. The country actually was bombing cities to rubble and waging wars to kill millions of people, represents itself as a well-intentioned force for good in the world. Excuse me, let me read that again. I said that wrong. The country actually bombing cities to rubble and raging wars that kill millions of people represents itself as a well-intentioned force for good in the world. Over the past 20 years, as documented in the table below, U.S. forces have dropped more than 337,000 bombs and missiles on other countries, an average of 46 strikes per day. Richard, I want you to understand that clearly in the listening audience. And this is since this report has come out. It says the U.S. has dropped over 337,000 bombs and missiles on other countries, an average of 46 strikes per day. This endless bombardment has not only been deadly and devastating for its victims, but also broadly recognized as seriously undermining international peace and security, diminishing the United States' standing in the world. Now, even in the face of the Taliban takeover in Afghanistan, they are doubling down on their success at selling this counterfactual narrative to the public to reignite the old Cold War with Russia and China, dramatically and predictably increasing the risk of nuclear war. The new air power summary data reveals the United States has dropped 3,246 bombs and missiles on Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria since the end of February 2020. The good news is the U.S. bombardment of these countries has significantly decreased from more than 12,000 bombs and missiles it has dropped on them in 2019. In fact, since the withdrawal of U.S. occupation forces in Afghanistan in August, the U.S. military has officially conducted no airstrikes there, and the new data shows that only 13 bombs and missiles were dropped on Iraq and Syria, although this does not preclude additional unreported strikes by forces under the CIA command or control. There has been no accountability for these 20 years of senseless destruction. Even with the publication of the air power summary, the ugly reality of the U.S. bombing wars and mass casualties they inflict on other people remains largely hidden. As December of 2020, as a December 2020 expose in the New York Times, the result of a five-year investigation highlighted the consequences of U.S. airstrikes. The article was stunning, not only for the high civilian casualties and military lies it exposed, but also because it revealed just how little investigative reporting the U.S. media has done in these last two decades of war. For most of the U.S. public, as it is for hundreds of thousands of deadly explosions, it never happened. Now that the new air power summary has filed in the previously hidden figures from 2020 to 2021, here is the most complete data available of the 20 years of deadly destructive U.S. Airstrikes. And Richard, let me say this before I just go to the remainder of the callers. This air power summary that had been released shows how many bombs and missiles that this country has dropped since 2001 to the present. And keep in mind that when this stuff broke out in the Ukraine, that at the same time, the U.S. was bombing Somalia, and you didn't hear anything about it in the news. Somalia is in Africa. The U.S. was conducting airstrikes on the continent, and you didn't hear anything about it on the news. So they want blacks to have sympathy for these racist Europeans in the Ukraine and in Poland, because people that did manage to get on a train and reach the Polish border, they were being turned away. They want you to have racist feelings for their racist brothers over there, but no feelings. They're throwing bombs on the continent. Now, this air power summary says exactly how many bombs the United States have dropped. And I ain't going to go year by year. I'll just read the whole total. On Iraq and Syria, since 2001, they've dropped 154,078 bombs. In Afghanistan, since 2001, they've dropped 85,108 bombs. In Yemen, which is in Africa, they've dropped 69,052 bombs since 2001. And in other countries, which could be anywhere, like in Somalia, they've dropped 28,217 bombs. And keep in mind, according to this report, this is only ones that's been documented by the U.S. military, not by unreported strikes by CIA forces under CIA commands. So it's more than that. So keep in mind, of these over 300,000 bombs that have been dropped on these countries, millions of people have lost their lives. This is a violent, racist people. This is a violent, racist government we live in, and we got to do all we can to free our people from this for the sake of our children. You heard the brother say he's 81, and he might not be here. But the ones that are here got to fight all they can to free their children from this racist, violent people. If you want to associate with that, then have at it. But plenty of our ancestors that fought and died for our people's liberty, and it should be well documented by our people, the people I'm talking about, they didn't want any part of this foolishness. Let me go back to a couple of these calls. Richard, at any point that you wanted that, before I wind up with these few calls? Say that again?
No, go ahead.
Okay, let's go to... 215. Let's go to 215 here. 215.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I really appreciate you, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, Mr. Ford. I don't know if he's still on or not. I really appreciate just the consistency of your program, and I know you've been doing this for quite some time now. Like, I think I met you once at Antiola's, perhaps. But just really appreciate the consistency of your messaging. So what I'm gathering right now is just big pharma, big weapons, big media. And I have to be honest, I'm in a metropolitan city, and I had to tell like some 15, 16-year-olds that was like trying to get into the mall. They was giving them a hard time. They're like, sorry, you can't come into the arcade. You're not old enough. You know, sorry, the movie that you
one, it's only one seat left. You know what I mean? They're just trying to do something, you know, productive. And I said, you know, I'm sorry. And black females, and I just told them, like, you know, I'm sorry about the world that we're leaving you. You know what I mean? It's going to be hard, but there's hope. You know what I mean? And I really meant that from the bottom of my heart, because I know that our ancestors who have come before us knew so much more than the little bit that I know. And the little bit that I know is overwhelming, almost shocking. You know, Julia and Nathan Hare, John Henry Clark, Paul Robeson, Jonetta B. Cole, you know, Marcus Garvey, like, there's people with answers out here. And then when people who are doing the work, who have the answers, Chokwe Lumumba, when people are doing the work, you know, they disappear. I'm just going to be honest. They disappear. I don't know how they disappear. I just want to say thank you for just your messaging, especially to the 81-year-old brother who's somewhere else now. And he, you know, and just happy birthday to him, number one. And, you know, just put on some old music, some play some, you know, Howard Melvin and the Blue Notes or something. I don't know. And just rock out. Like, I don't, it's not really much else to do but just sit and wait, you know, for them to destroy everything until they say, okay, you know what, maybe some of y'all are right, you know what I mean? And the some of y'all who are plausible, you know what I mean, who can tolerate, you know, for just a little bit until we take them out too, you know what I mean? But hopefully, you know, we'll get through this, and I know we will. So,
well, yeah, sister, let me mention this, yep, to you, because when you try to talk to our young people, whether they're young sisters or brothers, and give them messages, those things make an impact, and the words that you say to them might cause them to start looking at their situation differently, start studying more, and see what they're up against. Mm-hmm. You might be talking to a young Julia here, a young Malcolm, a young, right, Marcus. We don't know that, but we got to put the seeds out there. We got to throw the seeds, just like somebody was planting the garden. They throw the seeds out there, and eventually some is going to spring up. So just keep doing what you're doing, and the people that we're looking for to deliver us is right among us.
Yes, I do believe that. Thank you for that. And, you know, and I just tell people straight up, like, you know, maybe I failed. You know what I mean? I may not be the one, but you may be the one. You know what I mean? And, you know, so that's just it. And thank you so much, and I'm just going to continue to listen.
Thanks for your contribution. Excuse me. Let's go to 215 again. 215.
Hey, good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all doing?
Hey, sir.
Praise be to Allah. I don't even know where to begin, Brother Elliot. First, Elliot, do y'all still have Mr. Boyd's number? Because one of the listeners, he was trying to jot Mr. Boyd's number down, but he didn't get it. Do y'all still have a record of his phone number?
Yeah, hold on a second. 804-691.
Mm-hmm.
8528.
And what's the middle number again, Elliot? Six what now?
Oh wait,
the middle one.
804-691.
691-8528.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Brother Elliot. Thanks a lot. Yeah, and Elliot, you know, yeah, and I'm looking forward to you having with Mr. Boyd come back on, see if we have more time. I definitely want to, you know, encourage that brother and stuff like that. My elder, I want to definitely talk to Mr. Boyd when you and Brother Richard have him back on. And to the sister that just called, Elliot, it's beautiful, man. If you heard a sister, you know, was so intelligent, such so loving of our people, man, and stuff, and so caring, man. It's just a blessing to hear her. And to my 81-year-old elder, and stuff, I heard the frustration in his voice, because he's definitely been around longer than any of us, and he has seen a lot of things in his life. And like I say, you know, you heard the frustration in his voice, because people like the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Marcus Garvey, they did what they were supposed to do, and then to see this piss poor, excuse my language, black leadership not, you know, moving our people forward when they could have adopted the principles that these men taught while they was here. You know, it's frustrating, man, you know, because like when you look at what Mr. Boyd going through, Ellen Richard, I mean, you imagine if he had the support from that black caucus and stuff, the whole support, if they was more vocal, like you said, from running around taking some damn selfies with that old fart, the other night. They should have been up there, you know, advocating for these black farmers, man. Imagine the impact they could have. But like you said, being the town crier, like Mr. Boyce said, making it an issue and stuff, man. Telling these politicians on both sides of the aisle, you know, these black farmers got to be respected and taken care of. They instead of running around taking some damn selfies with Biden, man, all this nonsense and stuff, man, you know, it's foolishness, man. And then when he touched on the athletes, he's right. Imagine the impact that a Floyd Mayweather, LeBron James, and some of these other brothers and sisters, the Serena Williams of the world can have. They just use their platform that they've been granted by being a high profile athlete. They could use that platform to advocate for the black farmers. They could come on TV and do like a 2 or 3 minute spot, Ellen Richie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Listen, Rich, and I'm going to say this to you and then I'll turn it back over to you.
Sure, Ellen, sure.
Because it wouldn't cost them nothing to mention about the plight of our farmers. The only thing it would cost them is to educate themselves into exactly what's going on. Because I was watching the basketball game last night,
mm-hmm.
and they showed the bench. And I'll just use him as an example. And he's not alone, and I'm not trying to single him out.
Mm-hmm.
But they showed Anthony Davis sitting there. He's hurt. He wasn't playing.
Mm-hmm.
He had AD. A big shirt on, Gucci or whatever, written across the front.
Yep.
Several mm-hmm. of these athletes wear all this stuff by these European designers, and these European designers ain't paying them a damn thing.
You got that right, brother.
But they giving them all types of free advertising with that shit, with that stuff on their backs.
Are you telling the truth? Are you speaking the truth?
Why don't you do, it ain't going to cost you nothing to say, I support black farmers. My grandfather came from a farm. Because all of these people, all they got to do is look down in their family tree, and somebody came off a farm.
No doubt. I come from a family of farmers. Like I said, I got both parents from the South. My mom's from North Carolina. My dad's from Virginia. Both of them come from farming families on both sides and stuff. And so you're absolutely right, Brother Elliot.
I get so sick and tired of them wearing all that stuff on it, them European designers on their back. Half of them don't want them wearing it.
They sure don't.
And they're so quick to give them free advertisement wearing that stuff on their backs. And these companies just laughing because they know
sure.
that when some of the young impressionable minds see them wearing that crap, they're gonna run out and try to get it.
Exactly.
So they'll
exactly.
make millions of dollars from them young guys walking around with a Gucci, Pucci, Lucci, whatever they wearing.
it's a sad situation, Brother Ellen Richards. It's a sad commentary. That's why, like I said, shows like Time for the Awakening is important because, like you said, we suffer from we destroy for lack of knowledge, as they said, Hosea. But like I said, Proverbs shows that we can't get this thing together, man, because we have no choice. We have no option and stuff. And you know when my 81-year-old elder was speaking about the Ukraine, about how they coming over here, how they be coming over here taking jobs. Well, to a large degree, that exactly has happened before this current conflict with Russia. And I give a good example because a good friend of mine who's an all-state basketball player and Thomas Edison and stuff, one of the top players at that time, you know, he has suffered an illness and he's disabled now. You know, he's in a wheelchair. And I just want to make this clear to the audience, Ellen Richard, the reason why he was able to get into this apartment complex because of his disability. If he was just a regular average black man, you know, was healthy, whether he probably would have never been able to get in this apartment. Well, he lives in a nice apartment complex right off of City Line Avenue, which is near Channel 6. I mean, he's got luxurious apartments. And guess what, Ellen Richard? And then he's been there now for like 4 years now. Guess what? The majority of the tenants in the apartment, take a guess what their nationality is, Ellen Richard.
Oh, I don't know. Russian widow?
You got it. Ukraine.
Okay.
I mean, they had like about 12 floors, and majority of them are Ukrainians. I've met them when I go over there and see them from time to time. I'll be on the elevator with them and say, all right, because I even asked the lady one day. I was just curious. I said, that was respectful. I said, Miss, what a... I said, you got a heavy accent because he spoke and I spoke. And she said, I'm from Ukraine. And this is way before the conflict started. And she said, well, the majority of people here are Ukrainian. I said, okay, I didn't know that. And so I even told my friend, because he didn't get out there much because of his disability, but he's met a lot of them. Anyway, long story short, like I said, when I ever go up there, I run into all of them on the elevators and stuff like that. So the brother's right. They a lot of them are over here already. And with the influx of them coming over here, you know, they'd be getting priorities on jobs and housing and social benefits and everything. I mean, here, black folks that fought and died for this racist-ass country, get the short thrift. I mean, you know, and again, I put a lot of blame, Ellen Rich, on this poor-ass black leadership for letting it happen. I mean, these Negroes that we got representing us, I continue to say this, on the city, the state, and the federal level are a disgrace. And see, because of some of us political, and I'm going to try to wrap this real quick so the other caller can get on, the caller behind me. See, and what frustrates me, Ellie, because like I say, these people don't do what they're supposed to do, and because of our political ignorance, not that we are dumb people, because a lot of us just ignorant from the political landscape, we keep voting for these sorry asses on the city, state, and federal level, and we keep getting what we get, because as the old saying goes, the definition of insanity, and when you look at that word, that is so true, Ellen, when you break it down, the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same damn thing over and over again, expect a different result. It's like if I took my head right now, after I got finished talking to you and Brother Richard, Brother Elliot, and I hit bang my head against the wall 10 times and blood come out, and I wonder why it's keep happening. I go there and do it again tomorrow. It's going to continue to happen until I keep hitting my head until I wind up killing myself, because nothing is going to change, because I'm doing something that's foolish and harming to myself. So it's the same thing with our people. We keep voting for these dregs and stuff, and we keep getting what we get. Like the 81-year-old elder, my 81-year-old elder said, Kamala, she's slipping behind that old fuck the other night. She's chanting around like a damn cheerleader and stuff like that. And then, like you said, Brother Ellie, to see how brothers and sisters in that congressional black caucus there running around this old buzzard for some damn selfie picture, man. Come on with this foolishness, man. You know what I mean? With his racist, with his record of being a cold-blooded bigot, calling out people predators and lock them up and all that this stuff. I mean, short memories that these people have, man. It's just a sad, sad situation. And I'll close with these last two, and I'm gone. I promise I'm gone. And I'm glad, Ellie, that you put out to the listener what is time from the wicked listener when it's about the bombs that have been dropped on Islamic countries, on African countries, killing so many innocent men, women, and children in Somalia, Iraq, Libya, you name it, Ethiopia, you know, all the places, Syria. Well, you know, but it's funny we're bringing that up, Brother Elliot, because, again, white people's racism is manifested through the news media. Because, see, this media is so irresponsible, they demonizing Putin. They don't talk about the all the atrocities this country had done and still doing. Because, like you said, at the time when this Ukraine thing kicked off, they was over there doing airstrikes in Somalia. You know what I mean? And in the final car issue that just came out, they was talking about all the black Panamanians they killed with Colin Powell, with this sorry ass stuff, and made that Negro rotten hell and stuff like that. He led the charge in Panama, killing about people in Panama and stuff, and taking out their leaders and throwing them in jail in America. So this country's hands is dripping with blood. But again, you can't expect the white racist media to be critical of the United States, so they're busy demonizing Putin while Biden and Clinton and Reagan, the rest of them devils, go unscathed. And last point, Elliot, and it's, again, I'm so glad you put this up. To show you the demonic mentality of Joe Biden, the current occupant of the White House, just about a month, about maybe 2-3 weeks ago, maybe close to a month ago, the United States did an airstrike in Syria. And Biden was lauding this airstrike because it was supposed to take out some kind of, I don't know, ISIS leader, not an ISIS leader, or some kind of ISIS commando or Al-Qaeda, whatever he said, and Biden was lauding it. Now, at the time Biden was lauding this attack, he had got information that the airstrike killed about 13 people, mainly women and children. And yet this devil still got up there, Elliot, talking about Joe Biden now, still got up there and was saying it was a good kill. It was a good kill when they killed women and children. I mean, see my point, Brother Ellen Richard. This is the mindset this is white devil demonic mentality that you can sit there and call it a good kill, knowing that you kill innocent women and children, and you got the damn nerve to talk about Vladimir Putin. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Please. You know, come on, man. You know, I just want to shit out of before I go, man. I just want to thank you for letting me express myself, because I know y'all pressed for time. I just want to close out on that, okay, Elliot? Put me on mute now. Listen to the rest of the show.
Yeah, listen, on your way out, they didn't let me clear that up, although you said it right. They didn't say, because they killed that man, and I think he had his wife and children in the house.
Mm-hmm.
They said that he blew up the house with his wife and children in it. Now,
which was a lie.
Don't even make sense. You know, if somebody was going to blow up, you coming out, if they got the house surrounded or whatever. But I think that it was a drone bomb that hit the man's house with the wife and family in there. But they put out in the reports that he blew up the house up with his wife and family in there.
But eyewitnesses that was over there when it happened said it. That's what happened. They said it was a drone or bomb that killed the people. The guy said he watched it from about a mile, almost about several blocks away. He watched the stuff hit the house. He said no way in the world that man blew his house up. When two or three eyewitnesses witnessed it firsthand, you know what I mean? So we're not supposed to believe them or the lying ass white media or the white government and stuff. We already know who word I'm gonna take over that. You know what I mean? Knowing the history of these people being born liars. You know what I mean? That's an easy decision, you know. But again, I want our people to really let this sicken not in their mind what kind of mentality that your current occupant in the White House has. And he ain't by himself, his predecessors, and even the one that was black had it too, because again, black people, I know they don't want to hurt us, but more black people, more Muslims, more black African people died with joint attacks with that Negro that was in the White House a few years ago. I'm going to say it again. This Negro killed more people of color, black people in particular, while he was president than Reagan and Bush and the rest of them devils did. That shows you his mentality. You know what I mean? People don't like to hear it, but damn it, the truth is the truth. I mean, I can't sugarcoat the truth. It is what it is, you know. But thanks, Ellie, for letting me say my piece, and I'll be muted and listen to the rest of the show.
Thanks for your contribution.
You're welcome.
Richard, I want to go back to Newport News, too, because Brother Otis didn't get a chance to be on there. I think his audio was a little messed up last time. Let's try it again. Newport News, can you hear me?
Yeah, man, I'm not even sure I could get good reception.
Oh, you good now?
Oh, well, how far back you want to go? You know, I've been listening to you get it all. Look, I'll take you back to this. You were talking about the farmer. I think I called and told you all about a year and a half ago about my personal business here, and I said that not only have they taken about $16 million from the farmers, but they've taken almost as much to add property throughout the South, you know, through eminent domain.
Okay.
And I had a personal experience with that. But I was going to say that ties back to something else, too. I called in one time telling y'all when old Trump said something about Elijah Cummings and in Baltimore and the poor rental houses and all that. I told you, Obama actually was the president when the people won a case in Houston for the contractors not taking care of their quarters. And it ended up that the federal court said that the federal government had no enforcement power. Now, why do I say that? That's the same states' rights mess that allows money to be allocated to states. Then if it's left over, they're free to do as they please. The very same system has been in place, and my problem has been John Lewis, Clyburn, all of them know it, and they've done nothing to help black people by changing that. That is something Congress can take care of. You covered some other stuff, too, but I want to get that in.
You know what? Before I let you go, I see you put in the chat room that Obama got $150 million for that Brother's Keeper.
Oh, no. What I said is, you're going to love this one. I went after the girl, Crew of 42, is Lauren Burke or something like that. She's a Democrat consultant. And she was bragging about how Brother's Keeper got $150 million. And I wrote to her that was charity. That's a pledge. I said, but look what they did to the Ukrainians. So instead of arguing with me, she actually tweeted what I quoted. How does Ukraine get $1 million, but a Brother's Keeper gets $150 million? But it's charity. In other words, the corporations had to supply that money, and there's no proof any of them ever donated the money. Same thing with the $90 million that was supposed to go to BLM. Somebody trafficked it in $90 million, but none of the corporations have shown any proof that they gave the money that they pledged. All of this shit is a racket, bro. Be strong.
You know, listen. You mentioned about a guy that was on The View. I think I saw it. I read that in the online. A guy called the Constitution was trash or something like that. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir. Ellie Mistel, Ellie Mistal, constitutional lawyer. Used to be on CNN and MSNBC, but finally he just wrote a book, Let Me Retort. And what it is a black man's guide to the Constitution. You're going to love it. You probably ought to try to get him on. First time I ever heard black people shut somebody down, and he does it funny but factual.
Okay.
Matter of fact, Google The View and Elliot Nistel. You'll see it. And a Canadian guy called The Rational National did a really good take on it on YouTube.
What's his name again? How you spell it?
Ellie. Last name Nistel. Mystal. As a matter of fact, he talks about his parents, one of them being Haitian immigrants, I believe, and the other one maybe South Carolina or something. But he's a sharp brother. You check him out.
Thanks for your contribution.
Hey, be strong. Keep doing that work. Hello, Rich.
Let's go to final call. 646-646.
Yeah, what's going on, Elliot and Richard? Yeah, Otis was just talking about Elie Wiesel, one of the finest intellectual Negro peens there is, man. I mean, he comes from a family of race people. I mean, he's basically an individual who just beats up all white folks for the fun of it at times with absolute facts. I mean, you know, they don't respect him because he's a fat guy with a big afro and all of that, but he probably has the best legal mind there is in regards to the Constitution and law. I mean, he does a weekly column for The Nation, and you know, he's basically on all of the TV shows, like news shows like MSNBC and CNN. You know, I mean, he's a fantastic intellect, I would say. If you was ever to get him on the show, you would really enjoy him, because he's basically the real deal. And you know, he could do it any way he wants to do it in regards to dealing with white folks, toying with them, clowning them, and all of that, man. He's just a serious intellect, you know what I mean? But he plays defense also. But you know, he's someone that has probably already written a new constitution, could probably break the constitution down better than just about anyone, and will tell you that the constitution was never meant for or written with people of color in mind. He'll even go a little further and say women, and you know, because of the way things are today, you got to put the Monkey Men and Twisted Sister LBGQ Freak Nation into it. So I mean, I enjoy him myself, man, on Twitter. I think he's a really nice guy. You know what I mean? I think he has a good heart. I think he's someone that understands white supremacy to the point to whereas, you know, he just can't leave the system, but he's left it on a certain level, but he just hasn't totally divorced himself from it. I mean, his history is that of being a Harvard grad, a Harvard Law School grad, working in corporate America, fortunately having a wife also who's a corporate lawyer who's, I guess, able to hang in there with corporate America that has allowed him to step away and do the type of work that he does. And, you know, I guess economically it hasn't really hurt him that bad, you know, but he's definitely someone that if you could get him on, man, it would be enjoyable. Now, let me get to this Ukraine situation right quick. I was listening to a program yesterday with Dr. Gerald Horn, man. Hopefully you can get him on soon. I can't wait for him to come on Carl's show this week and talk about this whole Ukraine system, and he was on with Dr. Wilma Leon. And, you know, one of the key points that he was making is something that the Russian government had said that people don't never really want to look at, nor do they want to address. You know, they talk about Russia is such a bad country and this and that, but Russia don't have no army bases around the world in the manner in which America does. America has army bases all over the world. I mean, if someone was setting up shop the way that Ukraine has set up shop in Canada, Mexico, or someplace close to America, you think America would let them get away with it?
And
that's one of the contradictions that's in play. I mean, you know, Putin don't want that dead near his country, and I don't blame him. And he should have the right to not have that near his country. And, you know, okay, so what? He's had to use the necessary force. And I mean, hey, you got to do what you got to do to protect your borders. But how is it that nobody talks about America could have bases all over the world, but nobody else, as far as these so-called superpowers, have bases around the world? So explain that to me. I would really like for people to explain that to me.
Well,
why
I mean,
is it America can do it, but no other nation can do it?
Well, I mean, you're saying it, and which is good, but you don't expect the quote unquote leadership to say it, do you?
Oh, of course not, brother. They too scared to say it, and if you were to confront them about it, they lose their ever picking cotton mind. They wouldn't even answer you.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You got somebody like Lindsey Graham talking about putting a hit on Putin basically out in the open, and it's all good. I mean, it's just the contradiction sometimes, man. You just get sick of it, man. You know, America makes
I mean, but you know, but this is the thing, and I understand clearly what you're saying. But it just grates me the wrong way when I see these people that have used blacks, grassroots people from their community, to get elected to these offices because the grassroots people feel as though in their heart that Bobby, or, and I'm using fictitious names, that Bobby or Sally will represent them against this system. That's why black people, they don't vote for these people because they want them to become political entrepreneurs like the term Richard used. They really believe in their heart that these people will represent them against this racist system. But when they get in there and hear this foolishness being talked by their white so-called colleagues about openly killing somebody or voting on bills, when some of these systems that they're giving money to is just as racist as South Africa was. You know, yeah. I mean, how can you, you just lose all respect for these people. If you had any, have it anymore. But see,
have you heard any of them speak out about how the Ukrainian people and the Polish people are treating their African?
No, I haven't heard them say anything about it.
Not one of them. And this is.
I think one of them issued. Let me be fair. I think one of them issued some statement. I forgot who it was. Issued a statement which don't mean anything. They didn't use their bully pulpit. They could go to the press. They could have a press conference and put this out. I'm quite sure that media would show up if some of the leadership, if the leadership of the CBC or whatever had a press conference, or if the CBC themselves as a coalition had a press conference, media would show up, and they could say what they want. They might not be able to block legislation, especially if you get bipartisan support by these whites on both sides of the aisle, but they can use their bully pulpit to speak in behalf of the masses of black folks. But they don't.
It's just crazy, man, how you gonna ask me to back someone like Ukraine against the Russian people for what reason? I don't know. because I'm going to be straight up with you, man. That's white folks' business, man. I don't care nothing about the Ukrainian people, man. They can kill each other all they wish to, man. I mean, as long as it don't interfere with what I'm trying to do, I don't care. I don't care nothing about the Ukrainian people. I mean, I think they placed themselves in a position to where as they allowed America to manipulate them, and now they being put to death for it. You know what I mean? Because, you know, Putin ain't the type of psychopath that they make him out to be. I don't believe he is. I believe that he has a basic understanding on what he wants to achieve in regards to his nation. And it's like another thing. They talk about these sanctions and all of this, right? Putin is the third largest producer of aluminum, right? You notice how America ain't put no sanctions on aluminum because of as much of aluminum as we use in this country. Remember the mistake that Trump did in regards to soybean tariffs against the Chinese. Chinese said, man, the hell with you. I ain't even thinking about you. I'll go to the next producer of soybeans, and that's what they did. So then what they had to do, they had to then lie to the public and tell them that it's not affecting the public in the manner in which it is, and go out there and give millions and millions of dollars away to the people in regards to that whole situation. I mean, it's just a disgusting display of manipulation and things of that nature. It's like saying, well, the Ukrainians are under a certain degree of stress, the Russians are under a certain degree of stress for the sanctions. But what they won't tell you is that Russia is basically more of a self-sufficient country than others. I mean, they manufacture most of their products and they grow most of their food. So that's why their GDP is always so low. You know what I mean? They're not really hurting the Russians in the manner in which they're trying to make it out to be seen. It's just like they shut down certain economic portals and things of that nature. So what did Russia do? They just hooked up with India and set up different economic portals to be able to do what they had to do.
Well, do me a favor. Bring it on home for me because I'm about to post.
Well, go ahead, man. I look forward to hearing y'all Friday, and we'll wrap Friday. But all I want is for our listening audience to keep an open eye on what's going on, man, and don't let these media fools manipulate you. Hold up and have a good week.
Thanks for your contribution. Before we leave this evening, just want to give the lineup on time for An Awakening Media, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Hoshi. Always interesting dialogue and guests on African Perspectives. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the afternoon. And I'm going to keep announcing it till they come back on. I know they're getting settled over there. Later on Monday evening, Black Therapy Central with host Dr. Maria Kambine and Dr. Kamal Kambine. From 9 to 10, the first and third Mondays of the month, Conversation Reparations, which is in Cobra's program. Brother Jamoke is the host. On Tuesday, from 8 to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers as host. On Wednesday, it's our time, the Black Farmers program from 8 to 9. And from 9 to 10, Black Agenda with Report with Dr. David Muhammad. On Friday, from 8 until Time for an Awakening. And from Saturdays, from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa with Brother Alfonso Watkins as host. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Oh, no, we ain't. Hold on. Got the wrong cue here. Oh, man. You know what? Let me say this before we go off. It was supposed to be a press conference on Friday. We were going to air it between the World Conference of Mayors, which is the historic black towns, and the Cuban foreign minister in reference to the World Council of Black Mayors in support of Cuba. It was technical problems dealing with airing the broadcast. It'll be rescheduled. I'll make sure that the listening audience knows so they can hear exactly what's going on. Our people being involved in foreign affairs, which is always good. And we don't have to rely on these charlatans that are sitting in these elected offices because they don't represent black interests in foreign affairs. So I'll let everybody know when that press conference is rescheduled for so they can hear it air on Time for an Awakening. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. Fireman. children.